Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now the story behind our most important source of protein. I am referring to the humble chicken, which gets very little attention, aside perhaps from marinades and sauces in your kitchens. Our next guest is someone who definitely has thought about the remarkable story of the chicken more than you have. Joining us now is Andrew Lawler, author of Why Did the Chicken Cross the World? The Epic Saga of the Bird That Powers Civilization. He's a contributing writer for Science Magazine and a contributing editor for Archaeology Magazine. Andrew Lawler, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Nice to be here.
And I want to start by reading listeners the first two lines of the introduction to your book. Quote, add up the world's cats, dogs, pigs, and cows, and there would still be more chickens. Toss in every rat on Earth, and the bird still dominates. End quote. Wow, that's 20 billion chickens, three for every human. And yet, as you point out, we almost never stop to think about that animal and its place in our lives as humans. How did you start?
Well, kicking and screaming, I'm a science writer, and I wasn't really very up on issues of livestock, but an editor at a magazine asked me to follow the history of the chicken. And at the time, I really wanted to write about Bronze Age sailors sailing from India to Mesopotamia about 4,000 years ago. And there was evidence that those sailors from India brought the chicken to the West. So that's where I started, and then I got hooked. And I realized that the history of the chicken is really a history of the spread of civilization around the globe.
Do we go to the ancestor of the chicken? You know, start with what came first, chickens, but not at the egg. Many listeners probably know how dogs came to be domesticated from wolves, maybe because wolves came to us in search of scraps of discarded food. What is the ancestor of the chicken?
Well, unlike the wolf, the ancestor of the chicken is not very well known. It's a very obscure bird called the red jungle fowl, and it lives in bamboo thickets, primarily in South Asia. And this is a bird that's very, very shy and really doesn't like to hang around humans. But over time in Southeast Asia, the bird began to live in the vicinity of humans. And as we created villages, they began to nose around in our fields and they would eat scraps and they would eat little bits and pieces of weeds. And so it was a very useful bird for early farmers.
You noted in the book that the red jungle fowl is an animal so shy that there's a good chance the animal would have an actual heart attack if confronted with a human. How did that kind of scared creature become a driving force of human civilization?
Yeah, I went to visit a very purebred red jungle fowl in Georgia. And as I walked up to the cage, the owner said, now be very careful because there's a 1 in 10 chance that this thing might have a heart attack if you get too close, which made me very nervous because it was a very rare bird. These birds are very shy because they learned how to survive without a lot of defenses in jungles filled with predators. But over time, humans took them in. In a way, they're a little bit like humans. They like to live in a house or a coop. They like to be enclosed at night. And they get up with the dawn. So they really were in sync with early farmers around the world.
And you discovered that the chicken wasn't domesticated first for food or for eggs. Tell us about that.
This was the big surprise. I think most listeners would say, of course, the chicken is there for its meat and for its eggs. But no, most scientists believe that the chicken actually was domesticated for other purposes, mainly religious purposes. And that involved slaughtering the bird to provide it to the gods during various rituals. And it also took the form of cockfighting. You know, cockfighting, like bullfighting, began as a religious ritual. And over time, it then became more secular. But it was probably cockfighting that spread the chicken around at least South Asia as merchants would travel around and they would carry their gamecocks with them and trade and buy and sell other gamecocks from different parts of South Asia. It was a pretty big business.
First for the spectacle of violence. And then did people later discover that they would be a cheap source of food, or were there other things competing with the chicken as cheap protein at that time?
Well, it was only later that the chicken really became an important source of meat and eggs. It really wasn't until Roman times that people began to grow chickens on a mass scale to feed to large numbers of people. Before that, the chicken was primarily a religious bird. It was a bird that was used for these religious rituals I mentioned, and also it was a royal bird that was often kept in menageries. The Egyptian kings, for example, the pharaohs, kept the chicken, as plain as it seems to us, in their zoos, and it was considered a very exotic and wonderful creature.
And it was only, the developing of certain farming technologies that turned the chicken into a mass-consumed meat animal?
Well, chickens like stability. You know, if you're gonna raise chickens, you want to be sure you've got a nice stable coop. You want to be sure that you can keep predators away. And so the Roman Empire was really the first time that you had a stable system where thousands and thousands of chickens could be raised safely, and also the networks to distribute live chickens and eggs across a large area. But really, this was the tail on the dog. It was really only much, much later that these creatures became the major source of protein, and that really wasn't until the 19th century.
So, listeners, Andrew Lawler is here for everything you always wanted to know about chickens but had no one to ask. He's the author of Why Did the Chicken Cross the World? The Epic Saga of the Bird That Powers Civilization. Science writer Andrew Lawler. We'll take your calls at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Can you go into taste a bit here? And I wonder if our listeners from other countries could maybe add to this too. So immigrants from anywhere, do you want to reflect on different chicken flavors or what eggs are like where you came from compared to in the United States or anything like that, comparatively speaking, that you want to add? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Andrew Lawler, author of Why Did the Chicken Cross the World? Did chickens in other countries taste different from the supermarket cutlets we get here?
Radically so. I had no idea that chicken actually doesn't taste like chicken, at least chicken that I was raised on here in the United States. I went to Vietnam, which is where the red jungle fowl still lives in the wild. And while I was up in the mountains there, we visited a small town, and I was told that, hey, there's a really great specialty chicken here you've got to try. So we went to a local restaurant. And I was presented with this very odd plate that included the comb of the rooster. And this bird is actually black. It has a black comb. It has black feathers, black skin, black bones, and even black blood. It was developed in China and in Vietnam thousands of years ago for various medicinal purposes. And it's considered to be the ultimate in good chicken eating in Southeast Asia. For me, I found it a little on the oily side because, you know, like most Americans, I'm used to that very large and very dry breast. Mm. So a lot of it's a matter of taste. We've just been trained to accept the kind of chicken that we have today that is rather bland.
Eggs, too.
Eggs, as most people who've tried eggs that were grown by a neighbor or were grown on a local farm, as they can testify, you know, the yolks of eggs that are not the industrialized chicken eggs are there's nothing comparable to them. They're just so rich and delicious.
Frank in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
Hello.
Hi, Frank. Frank, you there?
Hello.
Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to know, how did the chicken, and for that matter, poultry in general, pass the Jewish dietary laws and become kosher?
That's a really great question, Frank. So there's no mention in the Old Testament of chickens, and so it seems likely that the chickens were not sacrificed at the temple in Jerusalem. And so after the temple was destroyed in the first century A.D., there was a little bit of debate among rabbis as to whether or not the chicken was kosher or not. But since it had not been sacrificed at the temple and was considered to be kind of outside of the realm of the Old Testament, it was considered to be fine to eat. And that's why chicken became very, very popular. And actually, there's an important piece of this for American history, and that is when Jewish immigrants came to New York, particularly in the 1880s and 1890s, by the millions from Eastern Europe, they wanted chicken because, of course, they weren't eating pork and beef was very expensive. So it was really the immigration of Jews at that time which began to power the demand for chicken across the United States. And so rural farmers in the South, as well as the Midwest, mainly women, began to respond to that demand by creating the chicken business as we know it.
Gail in Brewster has eaten chickens far from New York. Hi, Gail.
Well, I didn't eat them, actually.
Oh,
but
I'm
we
sorry.
Just got back from a trip to Hawaii where there are feral chickens all over the place. And I wondered if your speaker could say something about that.
Oh, absolutely. I went to Kauai in the Hawaiian Islands, which is famous for these feral chickens. And a lot of people misidentify them as wild chickens. But actually, the role of the chicken in the Pacific is incredibly important. If it weren't for the chicken, it's very likely that one-third of the globe, that is the entire Pacific Ocean region, would never have been settled. When the Polynesians traveled across thousands and thousands of miles to settle these small islands, they took the chicken with them. It was a really important source, not just of protein, but also they would use the bones to sew, to make tattoos. They were into cockfighting. The chicken was an all-purpose animal, as well as for medicinal purposes as well. So those chickens you see on Hawaii, although they look kind of wild, they actually look a lot like the red jungle fowl, in fact, are the descendants of those birds that were brought by the Polynesians, since chicken is not native to any island in the Pacific.
Hmm. Are they considered a problem there, Gail, or do people catch them and eat them, either one of those things?
I looked up a blog about it, and apparently there's a lot of mixed feelings about it. There's a lot of chicken roadkill, and people like them, the tourists enjoy them, but also they wake people up in the middle of the night, and it's mixed.
Gail, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
We have a tweet from Marisol who says, the chickens in Chile taste of fish. They feast on a diet of fish meat. And I think Jim in Morris Township has a similar story. Jim, you're on WNYC. Hi.
I have a question, but then I have a story. The question is, as he talked to historians about this, what have they said? The story is, my mother, we lived in Japan, she bought eggs on the Japanese market, and she fixed a beautiful pound cake, and we dug into it, and it tasted like fish, because they feed fish heads to the chicken.
Mm-hmm. Right. In fact, in mentioning Chile, there's a very important piece of chicken history that goes along with these fish-eating chickens, that along the coast of Chile, archaeologists recently found bones which they believe are chicken bones that predate the arrival of Columbus. And the reason why this is so important is because it may be a sign that Polynesians actually reached the Americas before the Europeans. So it's a much debated topic right now whether or not the dates are correct, but it could be a sign that the Polynesians made it all the way to South America, and those birds then jumped off the canoes and began eating the fish that was provided to them by villagers.
Diana in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Diana.
Hi, I love your show. There's a rumor that Kentucky Fried Chicken has raised a fowl that has no wings and no beak, and that is why they had to change their name from Kentucky Fried Chicken to KFC. Is that true?
Well, I did hear that rumor myself. I was unable to substantiate it. There have been a lot of very wacky attempts to alter the chicken. Now, keep in mind, the chicken is the most engineered animal on Earth, that in the past 50 years, scientists and engineers and nutritionists, along with farmers, have bred the chicken to be a machine, basically, to produce as much meat as possible with as little feed as possible. And there's an Israeli researcher who created a chicken that didn't have feathers. And the idea was it would reduce the cost of processing chickens. This was met with outrage by people, and rightly so, because the chickens use their feathers to stay cool and to stay warm, and that to take their feathers from them is adding cruelty upon cruelty.
Another caller, who we're not going to have time for, says those chickens without feathers are used in mass-produced chicken today. That's not true?
No, as I understand it, it actually fell flat. Now, there may be places in Israel where they're doing this, but my understanding is that it proved to be insupportable because, again, the chickens couldn't stay cool and couldn't stay warm, and so it actually didn't work. It was a bad idea.
I see that you did learn something about the chicken and policy that's really disturbing. In the U.S., when chickens are raised for food, they're not considered animals under the law. Do I have this right?
Isn't this amazing? You know, if a chicken is in a circus or if a chicken is used for, say, research purposes, then there are certain, if minimal, protections. But if a chicken is raised for food, there is no protection at all. In other words, there are no animal welfare rules which protect chickens that are raised for our food. And this is not true for pigs or cows, even though those standards are pretty minimal. And what I found so disturbing about this is that the chicken clearly has performed such important functions for us as a species over the past several millennia, as for religious rituals, for cockfighting, for medicinal purposes. You know, the chicken has given its all to us, and I think it's only a matter of respect to give the chicken a little protection.
There have been reports for a long time, and this might be what our listeners assumed we were going to talk about mostly today, how poorly chickens are treated, kept in small cages, unable to move, having their beaks ripped out. Is this why? Because they're not considered animals under the law, and so there's nothing that regulates their treatment as farm animals?
Yeah, certainly. This is a major part of it, because chickens are seen as different from, say, pigs or cattle. And I think this is something that it's worth us taking a moment to reflect on. It's like, why would we consider the chicken, which has been such a close companion for humanity for so long, why would we consider it a vegetable? Because clearly it's an animal that we know from recent research is actually quite intelligent. There have been some recent studies that show very clearly that even newborn chicks have an inbuilt sense of logic. They're able to make clear choices and that they have a lot going on between their ears.
We're almost out of time. Let me sneak Pat in Harlem in here. Pat, we have 30 seconds for you. Hi.
Yeah, I mean, chicken is a big part of my family's diet, and all of the things you're saying around the practices for raising it is really alarming. I mean, how do you find good chicken now? Is it any better than pork or beef, or should we be limiting the amount of chicken in our diets given some of the unhealthy practices?
This is a really tough question that I wrestle with every day, and I think what we need are some really clear standards. In places like France, they have clear standards. So if you want to buy a chicken that has been treated better, then you might pay a little bit more, but it's clearly marked on a container or on the package. That's true for both meat and eggs. I think it would be great for consumers to be able to choose so that we can say, hey, I want to spend a few more pennies a pound in order to ensure that what I eat is not just healthy, but it's been treated well. So I think we can make these choices. We're smart enough. We can alter the chicken business so that it really is for consumers to choose.
Did you alter your own chicken consumption patterns after researching this book?
Well, I have to say, if I'm really hungry and I don't have much time, I might still grab for that cheap chicken taco. I'll admit that. But I'm trying to be more conscious about the chicken that I do buy. And there are some chickens on the market now that give us some choice, chickens that are raised in ways that clearly are far more healthy, and they actually taste better, and they were treated better. So slowly, we're getting a few more choices as consumers.
By the way, someone writes in, the chicken is not the most important source of protein in the world. It's insects. Are you ready to have the chicken insect smackdown?
Maybe that'll be my next book.
Maybe that'll be his next book. Insects. Why did the insect cross the world? But this one is called Why Did the Chicken Cross the World? The Epic Saga of the Bird That Powers Civilization by Andrew Lawler, contributing writer for Science Magazine and contributing editor for Archaeology Magazine. It's been fascinating. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian. I enjoyed it.
The Brian Lehrer TV Club is up next. Stay with us.